The Palestine Report with Hafez Ibrahim Musa.
Hafez, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So Tony Leon is at it again. He's wading into pro-Israel advocacy.
Yes, he found this to be an opportune time to talk about Israel and Palestine, and in doing so, he's dug up very deep memories of his role as the South African official opposition leader and the very blatant pro-Israeli stance that he took at the helm of the Democratic Party and thereafter the Democratic Alliance. Two elements to this. The first is a new book that he's released where he talks about a variety of issues related to South African politics. One of those being the foreign policy stance of the South African government. He characterizes the South African government as being anti-Israel and bordering on anti-Semitic, also saying that the South African government has a very high image of itself when it relates to international diplomacy, something that he believes doesn't hold water anymore. Also, on the issue of water itself, the position of Tony Leon is chastising the South African government for not accepting supposed water expertise from Israel during the water crisis in South Africa a year or two back. On the back of those sentiments published in his book, Tony Leon then published a piece in the Sunday Times in March, which was titled "Israel: A Handy Alibi for South Africa's Foreign Policy." And to just sum up some of the positions that he took in there, he's saying that the South African government finds it very convenient to not focus on human rights abuses in many other parts of the world. He calls on silence on the slaughter in Syria, no comment on concentration camps for the Uyghurs, no entry for the Dalai Lama, no censure for Russia's annexation of Crimea. But on the back of all of that, he's saying South Africa finds it very convenient to always talk about the Palestinians. He says that the Judicial Service Commission was very quick to act on Mahweng, but not on other issues. And then he shows his colors blatantly where he talks about the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu boasting about how he has vaccinated 70% of the Israeli population and how Israel has a good track record, according to Tony Leon, of jailing corrupt prime ministers and even a former president. That has invited a lot of reaction to that particular piece in terms of letters, in terms of op-eds, and a notable one from the professor of law at Harvard, Ziad Motala, who brings out the following points, amongst them that Tony Leon has misappropriated the words of Desmond Tutu in that piece, because Desmond Tutu himself was very vocal critic of Israel. He talks about Tony Leon using whataboutery, saying that a country doesn't have to be vocal on every human rights abuse, and rather what it needs to do is to be principled. And why the South African government and the black majority in South Africa are sensitive about apartheid, particularly in Israel, is because they've experienced apartheid in South Africa. They understand what is racism. They understand what is land theft. And he goes on further to say that Leon is being very insensitive to say that South Africa should learn from Israel's jailing of corrupt leaders, because he's missing the entire point that Israeli leaders themselves need not be tried for small issues of corruption, but rather need to be hauled before the International Criminal Court, process that Israel is putting lots of barriers in place. And also the immorality of talking about Israel's successes on the vaccination front when it is exercising vaccination apartheid. And Motala concludes that piece by saying that Tony Leon, who, by the way, is married to an Israeli, represents pure propaganda and dramatic spinning of yarn to advance Israeli victimhood, the same way that apartheid regime in South Africa portrayed itself as under siege. And perhaps that characterization is totally in order if one has to think that Leon is a executive chair of Resolve Communications, which is an advocacy company for reputational management and strategic communication.
The Israeli census figures for 2020 have been released.
Yeah, so in 2020, an average of 4 articles a day in Israel were censored. Israel barred the full publication of 116 stories. It redacted more than 1,400 pieces, and the Israeli media had to send over 6,000 pieces to the Israeli censor to review. The background to this is all media outlets in Israel, as well as authors, publishers, they have to submit articles, any articles relating to security and foreign relations to the IDF, the Israeli military censor, who has to check it for review prior to publication. And the laws in Israel are based on emergency regulations, and these have been in effect in Israel since the beginning of the state right until today. These regulations allow the censor to either fully retract the piece or partially redact an article. And once a redacted article is published in the media, nobody will actually realize what has been added or what has been omitted to a particular piece. Again, why this is relevant, because Israel is a country that views itself and prides itself in its propaganda discourse as a Western liberal democracy, but yet it legally binds its journalists to send all these stories to the military review prior to publication.
And finally, then, the Ramadan build-up in Palestine.
So Ramadan is likely to start in Palestine tonight, obviously depending on moon sighting and other factors. So the announcement from Masjid al-Aqsa, the Islamic Waqf at Masjid al-Aqsa, unlike last year, where, as we know, not only in Palestine but all over the world, the Masjid al-Aqsa was closed except to imams and officials and staff of Masjid al-Aqsa. This year, it's going to be open to all. The word from the Waqf is that there's going to be no number restrictions. Perhaps we'll have to see how that plays out in practice. But the Waqf, on the one side, has encouraged worshippers and visitors to Masjid al-Aqsa to vaccinate. They've also outlined, parallel to that, measures such as regular sterilization of the masjid. Really big army of volunteers would be able to assist and prevent too much crowding at the masjid. There's going to be a big on-site medical presence. We also had over the past weekend a major pre-Ramadan volunteer cleanup of the masjid. Over 10,000 people from 60 cities across Palestine congregating for that. So overall, we can see there's a lot of excitement this year compared to last year for a kind of normal Ramadan, but that definitely overshadowed by COVID in the West Bank. There's going to be a curfew from 8 p.m. to 6 p.m. to prevent huge social gatherings and iftars, etc. Masjids will be open in the West Bank, but Friday Salah, I understand, is going to be held outdoors. But obviously, any Ramadan in Palestine will not be normal, under occupation. And there's lots of talk this year about excessive home demolitions, the normal restrictions on freedom of movement that will hamper the Ramadan spirit. Also, the siege on the Gaza Strip continuing, the water crisis for Palestinians all over the occupied territories. And there's also talk of a major incursion by Israeli settlers on the 28th of Ramadan, planned for the 28th of Ramadan to coincide with what Zionists call Jerusalem Day.
Abizab, as always, shukran for your time, and Ramadan Kareem to you and the family.
Jazakallah khairan. We're looking forward to Ramadan with the team, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.